Book of the Month. More than a podcast, greater than a radio show, quite simply an audio treat for the enlightened with Jill Appleton and Jill Prowse, and every so often, some extremely lovely writers.
The book we have chosen for this month was a finalist for the 2010 Man Booker Prize. The book is called Room and the author is Emma Donoghue. The first part of the book is based entirely within a 12-foot square room, where a young woman is being held captive by a man who sexually abuses her. The woman, known only as Ma, was snatched off the street 7 years previously, at the age of 19. She now has a 5-year-old son, Jack, and it is in Jack's voice that Donoghue tells their story.
After nap, Ma says she's figured out that we don't need to ask for a measuring tape. We can make a ruler ourselves. We recycled the cereal box from ancient Egyptian pyramid. Ma shows me to cut a strip that's as big as her foot. That's why it's called a foot. Then she puts 12 little lines. I measure her nose that's 2 inches long. My nose is 1 inch and a quarter. I write it down. Ma makes ruler flip slow-mo somersaults up dowel wall where my tools are. She says I'm 3 feet 3 inches. Hey, I say, let's measure room. What, all of it? Do we have something else to do? She looks at me strange. I guess not. I write down all the numbers, like the tall of door wall to the line where roof starts equals 6 feet 7 inches. Guess what, I tell Ma. Every cork tile is nearly a bit bigger than ruler. Doh, she says, slapping her head. I guess they're a foot square. I must have made the ruler a little too short. Let's just count the tiles, then. That's easier. I start counting the tall of bed wall, but Ma says all the walls are the same. Another rule is, the wide of the walls is the same as the wide of floor. I count 11 feet going both ways. That means floor is a square. Table is a circle, so I'm confused. But Ma measures her across the middle, where she's the very widest. That's 3 feet 9 inches. My chair is 3 feet 2 inches tall, and Ma's is the exact same. That's one less than me. Then Ma's a bit sick of measuring, so we stop. I colour behind the numbers all different with our 5 crayons that are blue, orange, green, red, brown. When I'm all done, the page looks like rug, but crazier. Ma says, why don't I use it as my placemat for dinner? I choose spaghetti tonight. There's a fresh broccoli as well that I don't choose. It's just good for us. I chop the broccoli into pieces with zigzag knife. Sometimes I swallow some when Ma's not looking and she says, oh no, where's that big bit gone? But she isn't really mad, because raw things make us extra alive. Ma does the hotting up on the 2 rings of stove that go red. I'm not allowed to touch the knobs, because it's Ma's job to make sure there's never a fire like in TV. If the rings ever go against something like a dish towel or our clothes even, flames would run all over with orange tongues and burn room to ashes with us coughing and choking and screaming with the worst pain ever. I don't like the smell of broccoli cooking, but it's not as bad as green beans. Vegetables are all real, but ice cream is TV. I wish it was real too. Is plant a raw thing? Well, yeah, but not the kind to eat. Why she doesn't have flowers anymore? Ma shrugs and stirs the spaghetti. She got tired. She should go to sleep. She's still tired when she wakes up. Maybe the soil in her pot doesn't have enough food left in it. She could have my broccoli. Ma laughs. Not that kind of food. Plant food. We could ask for it for Sunday treat. I've got a long list of things to ask for already. Where? Just in my head, she says. She pulls out a worm of spaghetti and bites it. I think they like fish. Who do? Plants. They like rotten fish. Or is it fish bones? Yuck!
It soon becomes apparent that Ma has spent the 5 years of her son's life devoting all of her mental energy to teaching, nurturing and entertaining him, preserving her own sanity in the process. To make life more interesting, she has created characters out of objects in the room, such as wardrobe, rug and plant. They tell stories, do exercises, bathe and do the laundry. Each day has a similar routine, but for Jack this is normality. Ma has tried to protect Jack from the truth of his existence by telling him that most of the places and objects he sees on TV do not exist in the real world. They do have the occasional visitor, Old Nick, on whom the pair depend on for food, light and heat. He usually calls in the evening and climbs into bed with Ma. At these times, Ma makes Jack hide in the wardrobe, where he counts the creaks of the bed until Nick makes that gaspy noise. There are days too where Ma is gone to black depression and Jack is left to his own devices. Mostly, he says, I just sit.
The faucet's like the real ones in room, but wrong shaped. Ma turns it on. She wets paper and wipes my legs and my butt. She puts her hands under a machine, then hot air puffs out like our vents, but hotter and noisy again. It's a hand dryer. Look, do you want to try? She's smiling at me, but I'm too tired for smiling. Okay, just wipe your hands on your T-shirt. Then she wraps the blue blanket around me, and we go out again. I want to look in the machine where all the cans and bags and chocolate bars are in jail, but Ma pulls me along to the room where the captain is for more talking. After hundreds of hours, Ma's standing me up. I'm all wobbly. Sleep not in room makes me feel sick. We're going to a kind of hospital. But wasn't that the old plan A? Sick, truck, hospital. Ma's got a blue blanket around her now. I think it's the one that was on me. But that one's still on me, so hers must be a different. The patrol car looks like the same car, but I don't know. Things in outside are tricksy. I trip on the street and nearly fall, but Ma grabs me. We're driving along. When I see a car coming, I squeeze my eyes every time. They're on the other side, you know, says Ma. What other side? See that line down the middle? They always have to stay on that side of it, and we stay on this side, so we don't crash. Suddenly, we're stopped. The car opens, and a person with no face looks in. I'm screaming. Jack, Jack, says Ma. It's a zombie. I keep my face on her tummy. I'm Dr. Clay. Welcome to the Cumberland, says the no-faced, with the deepest voice ever booming. The mask is just to keep you safe. Want to see under? It pulls the white bit up, and a man person smiling. An extra brown face with the tiniest triangle of black chin. He lets the mask back on. Snap. His talk comes through the white. Here's one for each of you. Ma takes the masks. Do we have to? Think of everything floating around that your son's probably never come in contact with before. Okay. She puts one mask on her and one on me with loops around my ears. I don't like the way it presses. I don't see anything floating around, I whisper to Ma. Germs, she says. I thought they were only in room. I didn't know the world was all full of them too. We're walking in a big, lighted building. I think it's the precinct again, but then it's not. There's a somebody called the admission coordinator tapping on a... I know... It's a computer, just like in TV. They all look like the persons on the medical planet. I have to keep remembering. They're real.
In the middle of the novel, Jack manages to pull off Ma's escape plan. The story then progresses to a tale of life after abduction, which is far from easy. As well as the pressures of the paparazzi and curious TV news stations, Ma and Jack are faced with many stresses, which they find hard to take. Ma is made to feel guilty about some of her choices, and the public seem more appalled that she is still breastfeeding than anything else they have endured. Jack struggles with his new surroundings, repeatedly bumping into objects and fearing the stairs and the rain which he has never experienced before. Even Jack's long hair and fondness for Dora the Explorer make it difficult for him to integrate into the world of gendered childhood. I was relieved that only a third of the book was spent in the room any longer, and I think that the story could have become too depressing. Using Jack as the narrator helped to turn an ugly subject into a story of hope and the special bond between mother and child. It did lead me to question society's expectations on how family life ought to be. An interesting read.
Book of the Month. More than a podcast, greater than a radio show, quite simply an audio treat for the enlightened with Jill Appleton and Jill Prowse. And every so often, some extremely lovely writers.
When you suffer a road accident that's not your fault, it's easy to be persuaded to go along with your insurer's recommendations. But I spoke to personal injury expert Charles Ather about that.
In my opinion, phrases like, you have free legal cover with this policy, are meaningless. If the accident wasn't your fault, you've nothing to pay anyway. I think what your insurer may mean is, but we've already sold your claim.
And if I don't want to be sold, can I choose my own solicitor?
Of course. It's your right to choose what's best for you.
Text claim to 81400 now.
With over 80 ensuite bathrooms and high-quality care for residents, provided 24/7 by qualified nurses and carers, Roseville Care Centre provides the perfect home for residents' emotional, spiritual, social, physical and intellectual needs.
A purpose-built residential care facility in the heart of Ingleby Barwick, Roseville is a care centre which provides facilities to accommodate residential elderly, EMI and nursing service users, offering both short and long stay accommodation, as well as respite and daycare.
To find out more, please telephone 01642 30 81 88 or email us at info@rosevillecarecentre.com.
Roseville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
PharmaNord is the chemist to call for your nutritional needs. All of our products have been built on scientific research to help with your health. PharmaNord can even help in such areas as senile dementia, strokes, and Alzheimer's. All our products are made in accordance with pharmaceutical standards and guidelines. And all our products are just one call away. Call PharmaNord on 01670 519989. That's 01670 519989. Or visit pharmanord.co.uk. PharmaNord, winning the war of nutrition.
Ather & Co. have years of experience in personal injury claims, providing sensible, professional, face-to-face advice to accident victims. I'm Charles Ather of Ather & Co., so you'd expect me to say that. But it's not just me. I'm very proud to say that the vast majority of our clients are recommended to us by other satisfied clients. People who know by their own personal experience that when it comes to accidents, it really is best to choose the one you know, Ather & Co. Insurers are for cars. Ather & Co. are for people. Call now on 01642 222 575.
From Southside to the world, in association with Middlesbrough Library Services, it's the Book of the Month with Jill Appleton.
Well done, Jill Appleton, because you're down with a little bit of a potential flu-y thing, aren't you, today?
Yeah, just here to spread my germs.
Hey, sharing the horses, so you can relax for a few moments now, because we have the dynamic duo, of course, of Rob Nichols, fresh from Marvin Emnes's hat-trick against Walsall. Hey! To celebrate all sorts of other bits and pieces here, but this time wearing his Book of the Month reviewer's hat, and of course Jill Prowse. Let's go to Jill Prowse to start off with, I think, just to get a sort of flavour. So here we are, Room, Emma Donoghue.
Excellent, what can I say? Really didn't want to read it. It's one of those books where when when we sort of got it to read, I looked at the synopsis and thought, oh, no, this is going to be so depressing.
To be fair, Jill Appleton did say it's another one of my depressing
Exactly,
books.
She did, she did. So that didn't help, yes. Yeah. So put it off, which you should never do, and then picked it up and couldn't put it down. It's one of those books, a bit like The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas, the perspective of Through the Child's Eyes, which made a horrific subject sort of bearable to read. A bit like The Lovely Bones as well, you know, I can see where they've put that sort of together. Because, again, something that is such a horrendous thing to think about, especially if you're a parent or something. And but because it's through this different perspective of a child's eyes, even though it still keeps its horror, because you know where everything's coming from, it makes it easier to read and easier to digest. And I just would recommend it to anybody. I couldn't put it down.
And unlike, of course, the John Boyne, Boy in the Striped Pyjamas, which we reviewed about 18 months ago or so, at least it does have an uplifting ending.
It does, thank goodness, yes. Yeah. So anybody out there thinking, oh, I can't read something with a sad ending, don't think like that. Read it and give it a chance because it's excellent.
Okay. Rob?
I like the way that through the child's eyes you get more and more like clues as to what's going on, and it builds as and you slowly but surely get the full picture of what's happening. You're sort of guessing as it's going along, but it's brilliant to be narrated through a five-year-old's perspective of being stuck in this small room that for the child is the whole world, isn't it?
It's interesting when both the protagonists emerge from their imprisonment in many ways. There is this notion that there's a short piece that Donoghue chooses to actually select where people start talking about the philosophical nature of the whole thing. And actually there is an element where you could see, well, we're all after a fashion kind of locked in our own little rooms. And there's always that kind of step outside and the excitement within that. But I think taking Jill's point, I did find that using the register of the child's voice was a really effective way of getting the kind of message across. And it was the perspective of Jack and his sort of line that it was very poignant, I found.
And when they came out, that was excellent as well, because you could see it from both sides so clearly through his eyes. You know, he had this completely different view of room to his mum, obviously. And it was so clever the way in the real world, through his eyes, you got a real feeling for we are, or you know, how society is today, but through his perspective, it was. I thought it was excellent.
It's a bit like this radio studio. I mean, to some people, it's home. To other people, you just think it's a nightmare. Just get me out of here. Perhaps not. Rob, in terms of actually identifying it from the male perspective, because, I mean, obviously we've got the Josef Fritzl case that was thrown to mind, and a lot of the critical comments about this, I think a number of sort of folks said, this is just Emma Donoghue effectively cashing in on the Josef Fritzl scenario. I mean, reminder, that was the horrendous tale of the Austrian chap who decided to lock up his family and all sorts of things, etc. Did you think that Donoghue was perhaps being a bit cynical in using this kind of things, or did you feel that there was a real attempt to kind of speak from the heart in this?
No, I don't think it's cynical. I think it's an attempt to explain what somebody would be going through, a very small person who only knows, who doesn't know anything of the outside world. I think it was, you know, it's a real leap to try and dissect that, isn't it? It's something I'd never really thought of. You think of somebody coming out, you know, that you hear about the challenges they face, but you don't really understand somebody who's actually born into that.
I think as well, I mean, just the whole, if you look at any book, there'll be some sort of case in reality where it's happened somewhere. So, I mean, if you sort of took that viewpoint, people wouldn't write books, because most stories out there, fictional, there's something in fact out there as well. So you can't really say that she's just jumped on the bandwagon. I think it was quite clever the way she's done it, and thought-provoking, and I think she's been quite sensitive in the writing of it as well. She could have sensationalised it a lot more.
There's nothing glorifying old Nick in any way. In fact,
he's hardly any...
Yeah, exactly, and you don't know anything about him. There's no attempt to sort of defend him in any way.
Not trying to get into his mind or give you anything from that perspective at all.
I mean, the only aspect you've got is obviously, and we would never endorse this at Southside Broadcasting, clearly, the way he actually sort of kidnaps her to start off with chloroform and then sort of locks her away. It's not, you know, he might have been lonely, but it's not a good way forward, is it?
No, not at all.
It doesn't work in that sort of basis. The quote that's on the back of the book from John Boyne, of course, friend of Southside, author of not only The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas, but also, if you recall, the wonderful House of Special Purpose that we did a couple of years ago. He's one of the most profoundly affecting books I've read in a long time. That was a really significant quote for me because, as I say, because Boyne wrote very much from the child's perspective in The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas, I thought it was good. And as you say, it was at least a much more positive ending, really.
Yeah,
it's good. It's good to sort through from that point of view. And he did get rid of his dreadlocks. And we managed to actually avoid too much product placement for Dora the Explorer.
Yes, yeah.
So good news as far as that's concerned. Jill Appleton, anything you'd like to add? Have you sort of had a chance to reflect on the whole process?
Yeah, I enjoyed the book. I mean, you get to where they're escaping and you think, oh, thank goodness they're out of that room. Oh, that's wonderful. But then it's not wonderful, is it? It's really difficult for them once they're out as well.
Yeah, they've kind of gone from one room to a bigger room.
Really. Yeah, and it's really hard, and especially it seems hard for the mum, doesn't it?
I was shocked when she'd taken the overdose. Mm. That shocked me. I didn't expect that. Didn't see that one coming, really. But really, when you thought about it, a very realistic possibility, just too much to take on board. Mm.
And some of the comments of, like, the sort of that person interviewing her for the telly, yeah. I mean, they were so ridiculous. But then that's what people think, don't they?
Yeah, and then you've got the really cutting comment, I thought, the worst thing you'd hear from her, is them sort of saying, well, really, you've been very selfish because you should have let him be taken somewhere and stuck on a step when he was born. You know, it's the sort of that throwaway line. I think you've been selfish for the last 5 years, where she's done everything to protect and look after him.
Mm. Mm. But there is a reality to that. I mean, we've just had series of urban unrest and various other things in this country, and some of the quotes that you hear there, and some of the phone-in routines, and some of the interviews that are being used by interviewees, you know.
Yeah, or maybe the media represented them, what happened in Norway. I thought an awful lot of the questions were quite appalling, really. Huh. And they showed a lot of respect there, but they'd be thinking back, where are they coming from with this line of questioning?
Yeah. I sense it's going to do very well in terms of our scores. It was obviously shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize 2010 last month, of course. So we're just looking around for the sensational world of David Nichols and One Day, which, of course, actually is now out in cinemas. So it's with Anne Hathaway in the role from that, or one of the roles, etc. So let's go for scores at this particular moment. Rob, the impact from yourself on Emma Donoghue's Room?
9.5.
Same with me, 9.5.
I'm kind of going between 9 and 9.5, I have to say. And, yeah, I'm going to go 9.5 as well. I think I've done something.
Well done.
You know, don't quite, you know, it's worked from that point of view. So, Jill Appleton.
I'll go for a 9.
Wow, never to let us down, Jill, is it?
Wow, yeah, that would ruin my image of being too nice.
Well, we're on 7, though, so that's a good positive thing from that sort of point of view. So, generally outstanding room. Emma Donoghue, well worth getting hold of, obviously, from Middlesbrough Library Services and books online and all the rest of bits and pieces. Now, Jill, we got a mention. You sent me an email saying
we've got a little
name check and
we've
a mention.
We've got a Middlesbrough Library's online reading group on Facebook. So if you're on Facebook, just look that up, and then you can join in the discussions. And one of the books that I've put on there is Room. So, and the book that we're going to be reading next month is on there as well. So if you want to join in with the chat and let us know what you think of the book, please have a look on Facebook.
Excellent. There we are. That's that. Now, what is next month's book going to be?
It's Gentlemen and Players by Joanna Harris.
Oh, good. Right. Just a little reminder in terms of the good things to come. We're hopefully going to be launching a companion book of the month, which will be the Young Person's Book of the Month, which is going to be anchored primarily, I think, by Francesca and Leslie Furman, but there'll be various other folk coming in, so we'll work our way through that as well, Jill. So
very exciting.
Looking to seek your advice on that. You take on the role of executive producer.
Yes, I can tell you exactly how not to do it.
So fantastic. And obviously, Rob, Fly Me to the Moon, very much in full force now. We've had the first one that's already up and running. Other Fly Me to the Moons will be coming out very shortly, no doubt.
They will, thick and fast.
Precisely so. It's nice to finish with a cliche. You know, you're always a bit of literary cliche, all fantastic stuff from that point of view. So, to Jill Appleton, Jill Prowse, and Rob Nichols, and of course, your good self, dear listener, many thanks indeed. I think it's time we said bye-bye.
Bye.
From Southside to the world, and in association with Middlesbrough Library Services, it's the Book of the Month with Jill Appleton.